Welcome to Kings Cast with Eric and Ryan. This is your weekly Sacramento Kings podcast for Kings fans by Kings fans. As always, this episode is brought to you by Ziggy's Smoke Shop. You can follow Ziggy's on Instagram at ziggy's.stockton. They have locations in Stockton and Tracy. We are coming off of episode 131, where Ryan and I have came in and talked about the importance of this stretch of the season for the Kings. It's been a big topic on Kingsland and here on KingsCast. We look forward to being back today for episode 132. If you're looking for any of our past episodes, you can always find those streaming on the Believe Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcast. Bringing in my co-host today, as always, Ryan, what's good?
What is good, everybody? Just want to start off the episode by saying I am currently... This is our first out of California podcast, Eric. I am currently in the land of enchantment, Albuquerque, New Mexico, in all its glory out here. It's an absolute shithole. I just want to say, let everybody know about that. Albuquerque, New Mexico is a bad place to be at. I'm here for work for a few weeks. So a little bit of change of pace from what we're doing. I am doing this podcast in the Courtyard Marriott, downtown Albuquerque. So, little different. This is the first time I've ever done a podcast outside of my nice little safe confined home, back in California. So, see how this goes. It's been a crazy week with sports. I'll just start off by saying I did not watch the Kings beat the shit out of Orlando Magic last night. I was watching Georgia beat the shit out of TCU in the national championship, which was, the worst championship game I have ever seen any sport in the history of my life. So other than that, it's been a crazy week. I've been super busy, kind of all over the place, but I'm really looking forward to talking Kings basketball with you. I think tomorrow night we got the Rockets at home, and then I think it's Friday the Rockets are home again. So good Kings basketball coming up for the rest of the week.
I have to correct you. Actually, not our first out-of-state podcast. I actually did announce the first out-of-state podcast last summer. If you remember, I was in Seattle during the draft day, and I hopped on and we did an episode when I was traveling.
Weird. I don't remember that. I must have been drinking heavily as usual. So I don't remember that. But okay, whatever. Second out-of-state podcast, but I got you beat, man. At least you had the scenery in Seattle. For those of you who... I was actually stationed in Albuquerque, New Mexico back in 2012, 2013. So it's been 10 years since I've been here. It's an absolute shithole. There is no sightseeing. This place is got to be one of the worst places in America. So if we have any listeners from New Mexico, specifically Albuquerque, you know what I'm talking about. It's an absolute shithole. So I think I have you beat there. I have to put the deadbolt on my door, put the latch on, make sure there's nothing in my vehicle, lock my vehicle. And if I could, I'd put a nice padlock on the outside just to keep people from breaking in. So, it's pretty crazy out here. But let's go. Kings basketball. Enough of Albuquerque.
Well, I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that where they filmed Breaking Bad? Did they film Breaking Bad there?
Yes. And okay, so there's signs everywhere that tell you Breaking Bad was filmed here. It's the only thing they got going for them. That's it. All right? I'm telling you, you have to see it to believe it. But this place is one of the most unique, craziest, dull places I've ever been to, man. I've been all over the world, guys. Okay. I was in the military. I was stationed in Europe for 3.5 years. I lived here in Albuquerque for a while. I've been Texas, Florida, all over the map. Been in the South. Albuquerque, New Mexico has them all beat. The only good thing that ever came from here was green chili, Breaking Bad, and Tony Snell.
Yeah, Tony Snell's funny. Well, I just bring that up because it's just like, yeah, meth, a whole show based on meth and just degenerates. Speaking of travel, a little more pleasant for me. Next week, I'm traveling to Park City, Utah. So I'll be out in Utah. I actually bought tickets, and I'm going to be going to Utah Jazz Brooklyn Nets game. Nice little lower level in Salt Lake City. But you know what? The bummer, though, is I found out today Kevin Durant's going to be out for the next month. So I bought these tickets thinking I'm going to go watch the Nets and Kevin Durant. And that didn't happen. So, which is kind of, I mean, we did see him earlier this year, though. Right. I think I went earlier. Maybe you didn't go to the
you
game
did.
With me.
I did not go to the Nets game. Yeah. I mean, we've seen Durant. You're going to be able to see Kyrie. You're going to be able to see Ben Simmons. That's really cool. It sounds like your trip's going to be a little more religious. Eric's going to Utah to convert to Mormonism. Is that a
Yeah, I'm going to make the trip back to the motherland,
yes,
dude.
Yes, yes. So he's going to go convert, and when he comes back, King's Cast will no longer be cussing, and we will not be drinking on the podcast anymore. So this might be the last one, fellas.
That's hilarious. Hey, so I wanted, before we get into it though, I didn't forget a player today, and last week you're gonna have to help me out because I hit you with the most random player. Do you remember who
David
it was?
David Wesley.
Okay.
So I didn't tell you this, Eric. So me and Eric have a huge collection of cards, and we were talking specifically from the 80s and 90s, all sports: basketball, football, hockey, baseball. A couple days after Eric hit me with the David Wesley random player. Dude, I pull out David Wesley's rookie card in all of this cards that I was going through. I'm trying to sort them all out, and I just thought it was hilarious. I was looking through that, and I'm like, "Oh man, dude, this is wild." So, I didn't tell you about that, but it was cool.
Yeah, what chance, huh? So, if you don't know, this is the game where we break in the episode to get the conversation going, where I give Ryan a random player from our childhood based on their bio, and Ryan has to guess the player. He is about 90% on these, so give it to him. Okay, Ryan, this one's going to be interesting. Okay, this player, he is far retired. He's an older player, 57 years old now. So just give you the context of how old he is. Okay, he's 5'11", 185 pounds. So you need to know his weight. He was undrafted. Okay, the college is going to be of no help. Southern. I don't even know what fucking Southern is. I've never heard of Southern. I know a lot. Undrafted and 88 point guard. His teams are long and extensive, okay? Seattle Supersonics, an 88 to 90. Denver Nuggets, 90. Spurs, a 91. Rockets, 92. Spurs, 92, 93. Golden State Warriors, 93, 94. Spurs, again. This is where you're going to know him from, the big bulk. 94 to 01, San Antonio Spurs. Denver Nuggets, 01 to 02, 02 to 03. Dallas Mavericks finishes his career with the Golden State Warriors. NBA champion in 1999, point guard. His number 6 is retired by the Spurs. It better be. You have 3 stints there in your career. It better be retired. Do you know who this player is? 8
Avery,
points a game.
Avery Johnson.
Avery Johnson. There you go. That's a good get.
Avery Johnson, yeah. Yeah, I for those who are listening, I had it before you said the number 6 retired by the Spurs. That was giving a lot of information right there. But yeah, Avery Johnson, that's a solid one. That was good. Yeah, yeah. Coach of the year, Avery Johnson.
Yeah, 2006. Bonus points if you can name which team he was.
Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, Ryan, I thought it might be tough. I wasn't sure just because the randomness of it, but, you know, you always come through. So there you go.
If I'm not mistaken, Dallas Mavericks that year, 61 and 21, were the number one seed, and they lost. That was the We Believe team, correct? Was he the coach of the Dallas Mavericks with the We Believe Golden State team that beat them? I that might be accurate, man. Just a little bonus points.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that. All right, you want to go? Let's go into the Kings talk, Ryan. So since our last episode, which is right at the new year, we didn't record last week. And sometimes when we go to record, we kind of try to find gaps in between games. We don't like to record on game nights because I feel like, you know, that. So just to explain it, you know, I don't like to record on game nights because sometimes the conversation, you know, quarter of the episode is about the game current and it's not really, you know, going on. So we try to time our episodes. I want to say since the last podcast, you know, let's summarize, I guess, the last conversation. And I did it in the intro. A lot of the conversation that we've had lately, which is just the importance of this stretch of the season after Christmas. So I look at the NBA season kind of in a couple phases, Ryan. You could tell me what you think of it. Like, initially, you just want to get hit the ground running and not fall behind. That's kind of up until early December. Then in December, you kind of want to not be injured. you want to have to create a nice buffer for yourself. And then at that point, you want to kind of be competing, going on a little bit of runs. Once you get to Christmas, you really want to be in a position where you're in a bit of contention. Because really, I think the most important stretch is Christmas to the All-Star break. That is where teams, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, false inflation in the standings early in the seasons, and teams drop off after that point. You can sustain it and fake success for a period of time, but you can't do it for too long. And I really feel like the end of December is that time where the fakers become, you know, evident, and they start to fall off. Teams start to separate themselves. So if you can shred water up until the All-Star break, you know, teams start to become sellers. They start to give away players. Teams sustain injuries, so on, so forth. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. A good example would be, if you recall early in the season, the Utah Jazz were a team that was number one in the standings in the first month. Look where they're at now. So that's just kind of my point. So that's how I look at the phase to this point for the Kings. And I think they've done a good job of not being injured, going on a little bit of a run, sustaining some success. And now they're stuck in this part where I'm talking about, where they're in contention. So they're kind of ideally where you want to be as you're navigating an NBA season. Do you think I missed anything there? I'm off anything on what I'm looking at?
No, I think that's accurate, man. We've came on here multiple times and told you, and talked about, you know, beginning of the season and getting to Christmas and, you know, the multiple seasons within the season and all that. And I really think that's spot on. All right, I got to change pace real quick, Eric, because I have to talk about this on the podcast. And I completely forgot up until this point, because I was catching a lot of shit in Kingsland. Guys, I participated in the half court, or on the on-court drunk layup thing a couple weeks ago. And what sparked my memory on this, Eric, was the Utah thing. And I completely disgraced Kingsland. I completely disgraced KingsCast as a whole. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. They gave me those drunk goggles. I couldn't see shit. I missed completely. This kid completely destroyed me. So I am embarrassed by it, and I just wanted to throw that out there for Kingsland and the KingsCast listeners, and just kind of acknowledge that before we moved on, Eric.
Well, and you kind of didn't explain it too well there. You got you got selected to participate on an on-court game or game during the game. That's what you did.
Yes.
And I lost.
I was assuming, I mean, the people who were giving me shit were currently at the game and they saw what happened. So I was assuming that they knew that, but I just wanted to acknowledge the L that I took on in front of 17,000 people. So
that is very big of you. I should have posted it on Kingsland. You know, I missed the boat on that, but that was a fun game, dude. That was probably that might have been the best game that I've been to all year. So that was the Utah Jazz game about a week ago, I think. I don't know. I don't have my dates
a little
up.
Longer than that. Was it after? It was after the New Year, man. Was it after the New Year? Shit, that might have been before the New Year.
Yeah, it was exactly a week ago from tonight, actually. So there we go. That's because that's why we didn't record last week. We didn't go to the. I'm looking at the stand. We didn't record during that day because we were going to that game. So that game was fun because we got there and we got upgraded by the season ticket rep. We sat pretty low, which was awesome. You know, it was cool to sit, you know, center court, couple rows up. It was just a cool experience. We actually sat behind Monty McNair. Ryan wouldn't go say anything to him. I told him to. Ryan's like, nah, man, I don't know. He was with his kids, and that's one thing. We're grown men, bro. You know what I mean? We're grown men, and we're not gonna go. We're not gonna go say something to a guy when he's with his kids. But if he wasn't, I would have said something. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, that game actually was not exactly a week ago. They played Utah in Utah a week ago. That game was December 30th. Kings won 126-125. Herter hit the late three. You're right. We're grown, man. I'm not gonna go talk to Monty McNair. But if I would have won the drunk challenge, I was going to walk right past Monty McNair and tell him to sign me to a 10-day. And we did talk about that, but unfortunately, I'm way past my prime. I had those drunk goggles on and I completely embarrassed myself. So I thought walking past him and saying the 10-day thing would have just furthered my embarrassment. So I held back.
You definitely would have got kicked off the podcast. And you're right. I just can't. I'm getting confused by all these dubs that we're having against the Jazz. I look at the standings. I say, oh, Jazz win. Yeah, you know what's funny, too, is if you remember, if I thought this was funny for the listeners, like they came up and they specifically told you because you had a beer in your hand. This is pregame. They're like, you know, you want to do the game. And they explain the game. And then the lady tells Ryan, well, you know, just don't be drunk. And I'm like, well, if he's drunk, he doesn't need to wear the goggles then, right? You know, he's good to go.
You know, one thing I was telling people, because I had a buddy at work who I guess it was on TV. My buddy at work had texted me and he's like, oh, better luck next time. And so we're at work a couple days later and I'm explaining to him, I'm like, dude, those drunk goggles, that's not like you're drunk, okay? As you guys know, I come on the podcast and I'm constantly drinking on the podcast. It's kind of my thing. I really enjoy drinking on the podcast, talking about Kings basketball. So I'm probably drunk more than the average human. Okay. I can play basketball drunk. That is 100% for sure. I've done it plenty of times. I play a lot of basketball. Those drunk goggles do not reflect an actual drunk person. When I put those goggles on, I was seeing like 10 of the hoops. It was wild. It was not an actual representation of being drunk. So I thought that was BS, and I did let the Sacramento Kings staff know that. I did tell them, I took the goggles off. I was like, look, I've been drinking. Okay. This is not a representation of a person drinking. So I did make that known while I was standing in the tunnel to the Sacramento Kings staff.
Well, those goggles are used to deter kids. They like the CHP, they go out and they set up like little courses and they don't drink or drive, man, or this is how it is. Yeah. You know, which, yes. Hey, man, you should never drink and drive. I'm totally against drinking and driving, so I'm not trying to say that, but it's kind of like exaggerated, like those old commercials when they're like when the girl's high and she's just melting, like yeah, dude, I don't know if that's exactly how it works, but you know, okay, it's just a little exaggerated, but that's kind of what it was like 10 hoops. Come on, dude, you had one beer, 10 hoops, like come on.
Yeah, it was so bad, it was so dramatic, the effects from the goggles, that I was calling bullshit. And I told the lady, I was like, you know, if this is how it's going to be, I actually told her, I was like, I don't know if I want to compete in this. There was a guy in the stands next to me that I was trying to, he was like, is it that bad? And I was handing the goggles to people in the stands next to me while I was standing in the tunnel, just so they could see how ridiculous these goggles were. I guess it sounds like I'm making a bunch of excuses, but I did.
It does.
I did get really nauseous after, like the goggles were so bad. It made me sick, man. I remember telling you when we were saying the stands how ridiculous that was, but let's move forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, we probably should move forward. Everyone's going to think you're just more of a bitch than you are after that story.
Yeah, it is. It is what it is.
No, it's fine. You know what? Last thing I'll say is like, I got the opportunity once to shoot. I've told on the podcast, but I got to shoot the half court shot once. And so, you know, the cool thing about doing it is, you know it, Ryan, that was a packed game, and we kind of went off on a tangent, but that was going to say about it being the funnest game we were at is that the arena is fucking wild right now, and that's what's cool. When you get to go on court in the middle of a game, you get to feel that energy in a different way, man. Would you kind of feel that?
It was one of the cooler experiences. When I initially went down there, I remember telling myself, like, all right, kind of just look around and kind of soak it in. It sounds cheesy, but soak it in and see what it's like being down there. It's ridiculous, man, how many fans were there. At one point I was staying at the free throw line opposite of the hoop that we were running towards, and I did a full circle and I just tried to look up and see and experience what players saw while they were running down the court, and that got cut short because standing directly like next to me within two arm's length was Leandro Barbosa and Doug Christie. And that was, you know, they were talking, it was, you know, it was like stopping, obviously a timeout or whatever it was. And they were game planning, kind of talking about some strategy and stuff. And I kind of stopped and looked at those two, and, you know, Doug Christie kind of looked at me and I thought about freaking saying something, but I didn't want to, you know, ruin anything. But that was a really cool experience, something that, you know, probably never experience again, being a packed house in a crazy game like that. So really cool, regardless that I sucked. It was one of the cooler experiences that I've had being a Kings fan.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up, because I got to do it and it's pretty cool. But that's kind of where the energy is at the arena right now. And I bring it up on the podcast because we get the opportunity to go to a lot of games.
and we have for years and years and years now. And not everybody gets a lot. Ryan, we were talking about if we had any listeners in New Mexico. And one thing I was going to say at the time is, like, you know, believe it or not, a lot of people listen to King's Cast. I don't know. I can't believe it. I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't know who. And we've brought that up. But I get the metrics sent to us, okay, from Believe. We're registered on that. And we have listeners in, like, Brazil and Argentina and Australia, a couple Asian countries. Like, it's kind of weird, dude. People listen to us from different areas. And then different parts of the country, obviously. And so my point is from that, and then people that participate on Kingsland, a lot of people don't get to go to the games. They didn't get to see the beam, that with the beam, the energy, the whole deal. It's just, it's different in there. You were talking about before you went on the podcast how tickets, anytime you sell your season tickets, like, they move quickly right now. It's crazy. The place is packed. It's nuts. And that's, you know, we don't talk about that aspect of it all the time, but that's what's really funny. It's gotten pretty dull out there for a lot of years. I know the end of last year was rough. You couldn't sell tickets. Honestly, you couldn't even sell them. You didn't even want to be there, but energy's right. And then mostly it's because the team's right. So that's where the team is right now. The Kings they have done, I don't know, this last week didn't go as well, I guess, since we last recorded, Ryan, the Kings, I guess let's do it. They have won. They are 2-3 in their last five. And so that's, I think, one of those, both those games that they did lose to the Hawks and the Lakers were pretty close. And I think that there's some questionable stuff in that Lakers game that kind of pissed a lot of people off, but nothing bad. I mean, not getting blown out. I think one of the issues that I have with the Kings is that they haven't been blowing teams out, and so I guess that's why last night against the Magic was a good watch. So I don't know, that they're just kind of, it's kind of the up and downs of the season, you know. It kind of ebbs and flows. You can't go on losing streaks, and that's, if anything, that's what the Kings are doing right. They're not going on losing streaks. Their biggest ones in the season, I think, are they've had two losing streaks tied for three losses in a row, which you know, I the years past nine game losses and stuff, like, none of that, and I don't foresee that. And then the schedule coming up, you know, Rockets, Spurs. So I don't know. I guess where the Kings are at overall, playing well overall. Let's talk about some of the holes. Let's talk about where that, because I think you have some things to say. Biggest negative thing that's going around now is the obvious one, which is defense, which we don't do game breakdown, but the Kings don't play great defense. I don't know. It is what it is. I don't know how they're going to change that, dude.
I think it's personnel. Right, like, defense, when you talk about it, at the end of the day, you know, you can be a quote unquote defensive mind coach like Mike Brown, and they have shown improvements obviously on the defensive end this season, but let's be real, again, at the end of the day, personnel is going to be what changes that. The Kings lack a rim protector, specifically. They're deficient when Domantas Sabonis isn't out there, and I know Domantas Sabonis isn't known as a defender, but when he's out there, they're worse. When he's not out there, they are worse. So they are lacking a rim protector, specifically a backup big man, and then overall length. There's times when it's Davion Mitchell, it's Malik Monk out there, it's Keegan Murray, it's Sabonis, and then maybe Harrison Barnes. That's a relatively small lineup. And I think for Sacramento to get better on the defensive end, it's personnel. Hence why they probably signed PJ Dozier today to a 10-day contract. Guy's a backup ball handler. He's got the length. He's someone that I think they think can come in and provide a little bit of versatility, specifically on the defensive end. So I think that's what we're trending towards. We are creeping closer and closer to the trade deadline. And I think Sacramento, obviously, Monty McNair realizes and recognizes the deficiencies on the roster. And I think that's what they're going to go towards. I think they're trending towards, you know, replacing those deficiencies, specifically with length and defense.
The difficult part about an NBA roster is that you only have so many players, and moves only get made at certain points of the year. And you can't really just, like, unlike the NFL, you can't just, like, scheme up certain stuff and, you know, decide one day we're going to be all this, we're gonna be all defense. We're gonna be all, you know, it doesn't really work the way, like you said, it relies heavily on personnel. I think secondly, matchups too, and then you know, and then also obviously offensive game, defensive game affects each other, right? And so that's something I was listening to the broadcast, because I, you know, like I said, I don't like to be the play breakdown guy, you know, but that's one thing they've been talking about a lot in broadcasts. And I thought to bring it on here is that the Kings do score consistently, you know, really high up. Their offense is really high up there. And so there is that. And you know, it just shows that they're able to win games on that. And that's why you see them get into these matchups occasionally, where they can kind of run teams and they match. They're a tough matchup for certain teams. We talk about some of the bigger, kind of slower teams that maybe don't have the length. And that's why the Nuggets, when we talked last time, we're like, yeah, the Nuggets are a team to match up against. I actually like the matchup against the Lakers, although they fumbled that the other night. But then I think that's why they have a tough time against teams who can play some defense and score, you know, like, that's what it's going to take if you really want to be in that top part of the Western Conference, then honestly come playoff time. And so with what's on the roster, there is not a solution. And we said that at the beginning of the season, like, the solution might just not be there. So they do focus on the strengths, I guess. And the good thing is the conversation brewing around right now amongst Kingsland is like, what are the pieces that are going to be up for movement? Okay. And I wanted to bring some of those through you real quick, Ryan. And I'm not going to focus specifically on players yet, because I'm going to hit our guy Vignesh, who we've listens to the podcast. We brought up his takes on here, so shout out you, Vignesh. But he made a post in Kingsland I didn't necessarily agree with today, and you know, I think a lot of people out there share this sentiment, but I just bring it up, and not to pick on him, but just more just the take. And he says picks aren't options in trade packages, like the Kings shouldn't move picks, and that they aren't going to move Mitchell or Monk. And I agree, they're not going to move Monk, but I do think they can move Mitchell. And he says they would have to move Barnes, and that Keegan would move into that role. And so he kind of goes into that without reading the whole post. And I've seen other people make this take as well. Like, certain guys are, I'm not going to say untouchable, because that's not what people are saying. I'm not putting words in people's mouths. But if they're not going to move player here, player there, I think they would move Mitchell, and I think they would move picks. And I think that now that trade season is among us, I would like to put it out there, Ryan, that, you know, for the listeners, that we can talk about, and that picks, even though they're further out, they're in the teens, they're valuable. Because you know what? Most picks that are traded are lottery protected, top 10 protected, or top 5 protected anyway. So you have that. And then there's a lot of value when it comes into contract matching and contract absorption. So if you're able to, if a team has a player that makes 20, 22 million, and the Kings can give up two players, one of them Holmes, one of them a pick, and then one of them is a Mitchell, who are younger and has potential but cost less and break up a larger contract, like, that stuff is of value in the trade time. And I think all of it should be of consideration. All of it should be of consideration, if of value. You know what I mean? So I wanted to kind of start it off by that on the assets and hear your take, I guess, when it comes to these things.
So I think with what Vignesh was talking about, because I remember reading the tweet earlier on today about that, and what he's talking about, the pick being further out, I think it has to do with the protections, and the Kings can't trade a first-round pick. I can't remember. I don't remember. Is it 2026?
Oh, is that what he means? And if that's what he means, that might be good.
I think that's what he was referencing when he said the pick was further out. There's, I got to go back and look. I haven't done my trade deadlines homework like I should have already. Like I said, I'm freaking in a hotel right now in Albuquerque for work. But I think that's what he was referencing. It was the pick was further out, as in years, not in pick, you know, position for this coming up season.
Let me clarify that. Then that makes a lot more sense on his reply. And that, I think what it is the Herter trade was part of that. And,
yes.
And you're right. It's with
Atlanta, and it's with how they can change that. There's ways around that. That it's really not too hard. Let's talk about assets. Okay. Davion Mitchell's 100% a movable asset, all right? And I want to talk about him specifically because People have, and I know you don't want to put words in people's mouth with saying untouchable, but people have this mindset that Davion Mitchell is quote unquote almost untouchable. And people talked about it last year about how he's part of the core moving forward. I think Davion Mitchell is movable because of his, first off, his age and the position that he plays. All right. I understand that he's a really good, if not great, perimeter defender, but keep in mind Davion Mitchell's 6'1", right? Keep in mind Davion Mitchell is playing the same position as your franchise cornerstone, right? So if you are able to move a guy with a little bit of potential and upgrade a huge deficiency for Sacramento, which is length, right? I think you do that. So a lot of people I've been seeing tweeting out about don't move Davion Mitchell. He's our best. You know, I saw a tweet today that was people are saying that we need more defense, but then they're including Davion Mitchell in those trade scenarios. And I think what people who are including Davion Mitchell in those trade scenarios are getting at is he's 6'1", right? Like he's a point guard who's playing, you know, less than 20 minutes a night because your franchise cornerstone plays the same position. So if you can upgrade another position, and add in a few picks and bring back an all-star or a young 3-and-D guy, I think Sacramento move towards that. It's further, you know, farther going into trade assets. I think Terrence Davis is completely out of the rotation. I don't completely agree with it, but I think he's an asset coming up to the trade deadline. And then you talked about matching contracts. Your prime candidate for that is Rashawn Holmes. You know, he just signed that extension for, I think, 2 years past this year or 3 years past this year. I can't remember at the moment, but that is a really good candidate to match contracts and bring in another player to help Sacramento out. And then we all know Harrison Barnes with the expiring contract, who I earlier on in the season a podcast said that I thought that he was a trade candidate. I don't think they do it now. I think he's too important to what this team's doing. And I think this is kind of a playoff or bust season for Sacramento. I don't see Harrison Barnes being moved, but the Rashawn Holmes, Terrence Davis picks, and then especially Davion Mitchell. I would really pay attention to moving in the next few weeks towards the trade deadline.
I think that was a great way to bring it all together. And I still even think, though, that if the Kings had to move future pick, even if it, you know, whatever the protection, whatever the years, I still think that is valuable, because when teams move off of, when they get tired of guys or they've moved past a guy and they go to move them, typically it's a rebuild situation. So if you're the quickest, if I'm a bad team, what I'm doing is I'm absorbing whatever contracts I can get, and giving up whatever good players I have and acquiring picks. Because what you're doing is you're pushing your rebuild 2 to 3 years down the road, where the contracts you acquire that are whatever, they fall off, and eventually you just have a team of picks. And so that's why I do think that could happen, where if the Kings give up some type of, that's why the Lakers are in a situation where even though they have picks 3-4 years from now, they're still in talks, because it's teams are willing to take that because whatever, you know, if they're rebuilding, they'll just sit on a future pick and take a contract. And so that's where the Kings are in the position right now, where they have to look at. And credit to Vignesh back, because I want to give the full scope of what he said and kind of what other people on here are saying as well, is that there's the belief, Ryan, that there's not an all-star available and nobody really stands out. And that's where I think that I wanted you to kind of elaborate into more, because I think you and I probably agree, like, all-star player, that would be great, but it might not necessarily be around all-star player, because what I'm hearing you saying is that Davion Mitchell, although good or not or whatever in his skill set, it's a buried position right now, not being maximized. And if you can translate the quality or tier of player that Davion Mitchell is into a different position, say at forward or center, where it's going to play more minutes and be more of value, then that's going to be better for the Kings as far as where they're at now getting into the playoffs. Am I hearing your take right?
Yeah. And let's be clear. I'm not advocating for Sacramento to move Davion Mitchell by any means, right? I'm not sitting here saying he needs to be on our trading block. He's a key piece. All I'm saying is that's the situation that we're having right now, right? Is Davion Mitchell, albeit probably our best defender for sure, He plays a position where, you know, the team's probably best player is there, right? Like, you can upgrade other areas, and he's probably your strongest trade piece as far as you know, assets go moving towards the trade deadline. So yeah, I think you're spot on with what you're saying. And then, you know, I think people need to look at that. I think people need to look at the full scope of the Sacramento Kings roster. And you know, like, again, I'll reference those tweets that people have been saying, you know, Sacramento needs a defensive upgrade, but they're including their best defensive player in those trade pieces. I agree. I understand the mindset behind that tweet, but I think that you can upgrade the defense by moving your best defender. And I know it sounds crazy, but I think just his size and the position that he plays, like you said, being buried on the depth chart behind your best player, I think there's ways that you can, you know, trade your best defender, bring in a bigger, more athletic, lengthier guy, and upgrade the defense that way, if that makes sense.
Well, it comes down to a basic problem in that we would all agree that there are a couple areas here where the Kings need to improve. We all know that. Well, they're limited on what they can move as far as assets go. So really, there's only a couple different assets that they have that you're willing to move. And depending on how you combine them, that is going to yield better player or not, you know? So it's like, there's only a couple combinations of things what can happen here. And so when you start to go down the line, it's like protected future picks. Okay. That's there. Rashawn Holmes not playing, his contract match salaries. Okay. That's probably in the piece. Terrence Davis, who's a productive player, fell out of rotation. He's in the mix. Davion Mitchell, a second year player who has a good skill set that a team might want to take in. Okay. He's there. Outside of that, you're right. You're kind of getting to a point now where I don't really see what's going on. I think that a blockbuster trade in the NBA are difficult to make, and where the Kings are at right now, in order to get some type of blockbuster trade, I just don't see them being willing to move multiple players in their rotation to make it happen. So I guess that's the dilemma, right? The Kings need to improve. Those are the guys. There's probably not a top star available, or if it is, we're not probably willing to make that move right away. So where are you at? And that's what's going to happen. And I think that when it comes down to it, I think it's going to be more minimal, you know. And I think as we get to the deadline, we've talked about there's other guys out there where when we get to a playoff run, adding another shooter, adding another guy who can actually play in the rotation. I think that's what I said. The obvious one that always stands out is the front court, because there really is nobody. They've tried different things. Thank God for Trey Lyles, which is crazy. You know, I mean, he's one guy who, okay, he can actually go in there and play a little bit in the front court. Besides that, Metu plays, he doesn't, he's hurt, he's in, he's out, right? They brought in Kata for a little bit from the G League, tried him out. Obviously, that's not a real thing. So Rashawn Holmes just can't even get on the court. And when he does, he looks lost. You know, he just does. I intentionally pay attention to the guy. We went to that Jazz game, and I was like, dude, you know, and he gets a couple shots. No one's on him. He gets passed. He gets his little floater in the lane. He always hits free throws. Okay. Gets a couple rebounds, bounces. But really, the impact's not there. So, like, it's almost desperate. Would you call the front court situation almost desperate? Like, they can't go into it like this?
It is, and I think that's Sacramento's one problem. That is, you know, they're a few games above 500. I think that's the one issue with them so far, that they haven't been able to separate themselves from that pack that's roaming around the 5 through 10 seeds right now. It's, you know, Sacramento's issue is Domantas Sabonis, he fouls a lot, right? So at the end of the games, I mean, he's fouled out a bunch of times, but there's a lot of times where Sabonis has to go to the bench because of foul trouble. And Sacramento's running into issues with that big man who comes into the game. Right. So if they can find a serviceable big man who can come in and eat minutes and doesn't just piss away a lead and have some positive to the game, I think that's going to be a huge plus for him. That's the one issue I've seen is Domantas Sabonis gets in foul trouble and there's nobody to come in and eat those minutes. And like you said, they've tried Kata, they tried Metu, they've went to Trey Lyles, who, you know, great offensive game. I love Trey Lyles' offensive game, but let's be real. The guy's not a defender. He's not a rim protector. He's not a rebounder, right? And when those are your deficiencies, as great as Trey Lyles is on the offensive end and, you know, the spacing that he brings, and he's a great spark offensively, at the end of the day, Sacramento doesn't need more offense. Sacramento needs rebounding and defense, okay? So you know, when Rashawn Holmes and Kata and Metu and Len, who they even tried to throw in the starting lineup against Jokic the other night against Denver, you know, that shit's not working, right? So you're in desperate mode to try to fill those minutes, and that's a huge issue. You know, Sacramento is literally Sabonis hurting that thumb again to being a really, really average slash below, you know, below the playoff mark team because of their lack of depth in the front court. They have to fix that. I 100% agree. Desperate mode in the front court.
Yeah, it's yeah, desperate. That's where I'm at. And I think, I don't know, I'm optimistic. You know, I don't know where the fans, I think fans right now are too eager. They're really eager. I think people just see the problem, fix problem right away. And I guess that's where I'm going at. Like, they do have limited resources available. And if they just want to pull off some bullshit player trade, they're going to be able to get that done. Okay, they're going to do some bullshit player swap, absorb a contract and get it done. Is it going to make the difference? I don't know. You know, it's going to be someone that they want, that's going to fit a value. It's going to take some time, and you're probably going to have to give up a little bit of something. And I guess to circle back, that's where I'm coming from. Davion Mitchell is the one enticing thing that you have on here. And that's kind of, I think, where we're going with it.
Yeah. You said it right. To get something, you got to give up something, right? NBA GMs aren't fucking idiots. Okay. No, at the end of the day, they're really not though. Like they're, you know, it's the NBA. People don't give up free players for nothing. Okay. To get something, you got to give something. And that is something that Sacramento's not really used to, right? Like, we're in a position for the first time in 17 years to where, you know, holy shit, like we can actually make a run at this, right? Like we're smacked up in the middle of, you know, the season as the 5 seed, you know, if we want to improve the roster, people aren't just going to give them to us. There's going to be some type of risk. We got to give up something to get something. So keep that in mind as we're moving forward the next few weeks towards the trade deadline. Your guys' trade machine shit with, you know, us bringing back a player. This doesn't mean anything, but a player like, you know, OJ Anunoby or whatever his name is from Toronto, right? I don't want to see you giving up Terrence Davis and the 7,000 second round picks that Sacramento owns over the next few years for that guy, right? Let's be realistic. To bring a player of that caliber, it's going to take something. You're going to have to give something up to get something. So moving forward, keep that in mind, because that is something to recognize.
It is. And that's where it's going to be interesting what's available. I think that as the trade machine stuff coming up, what I'm looking at is a player that is in the $12 to $18 million range. That's what I'm looking at. A $12 to $18 million player that is, that's the target. Because when I look at $12 to $18 million, that's where you look at a package, and it's Mitchell, Davis,
Holmes,
you know, if you had to, I guess, Lynn, whoever else contracts are sitting on it, whatever, throw-ins. That's where you get throw-ins. And so don't be mistaken too, Ryan. You said something there, people just don't give up players. And sometimes people say, well, yeah, huh, you've seen plenty of trades. Well, sometimes when you give up a player, you may not get the player in return, but you get cap space in return. So that's something too. As I said, to plant a seed as we go into it, you got to start looking into the cap and those types of players, middle tier guys. Because I don't know, it doesn't even need to be a starter. Do you think it needs to be a starter that needs to come in?
No, I don't think it needs to be a starter. And obviously it doesn't need to be a starter, because we've talked about, we need somebody to back up Sabonis and eat those minutes. But it has to be an impactful player. Okay. It can't just be, some random big men from some team. You know, one of the things that I've seen is Mason Plumlee. Okay. And that's been a big name, and people want to throw out his assist rate, whatever, because they're trying to compare it to what Sabonis does through the offense. Let's be real. Mason Plumlee comes here, we're not running the fucking offense through that guy. Okay. Like, so I'm not a fan of a move like that, because at the end of the day, I don't think Mason Plumlee affects Sacramento as much in the win column and boosts them to that next level to really separate themselves as the 5 seed in the playoffs. It needs to be an impactful player. I haven't looked through players available. Maybe I'll come next podcast a little more prepared on players that I think would separate, you know, and make a real impact. But I don't think a Mason Plumlee level guy is that guy. I think it's a step above him. But I also don't think that Sacramento can bring an OG from Toronto level. I don't think that's really reasonable. I think there's somewhere in the middle between OG and Mason Plumlee that I, you know, maybe it's two players that Sacramento can bring in and kind of fill those voids. So as we get closer to the trade deadline, we always come with that trade deadline special, and we will have real life scenarios that we think will play out for Sacramento.
We've been pretty good with the trade deadline specials.
We have.
I would take Plumlee, but you know, I would not have to have a debate around him.
Yeah,
we'll talk
about that later on. Yeah.
Personally, though, for me, I differ a little bit in that I just think it needs at this point, without giving up too much, you're just trying to get someone who can play. So for me, that's what I said. I would take a Plumlee because for me, yes, I'd love to have that next tier, but realistically, I just want someone who's going to come in here and actually play. I think the Kings are playing at times with one arm behind their back, and that's what you described, that those late game situations, those bad matchup games, the foul situation games, they don't have a full deep rotation all the time when that happens, and that's their problem. So for me, I just need someone who can play.
Well, there's nothing wrong with Plumlee as an NBA basketball player. What I'm saying and what I've been seeing on tweets is people have been throwing Mason Plumlee out there because they're like, well, look at his assist rate. Right. Look at this. And people have to realize, okay, a backup big who comes in is not going to play the same role as Domantas Sabonis. Okay. So you have to understand that it doesn't really matter that his assist rate, they're not going to run the offense through him. Okay. I'm looking more for that specialty player, right? That player who comes in and their number one attribute is either rebounding or rim protecting. Okay. I don't see Mason Plumlee as either of those. Would I be happy if Sacramento was able to bring in Mason Plumlee for, second round pick or 2 second round picks? Yeah, I'd be ecstatic. I think that's good value, but I want people to realize that you bringing in a guy of Mason Plumlee's caliber to fit Domantas Sabonis' specific role is unreasonable. That's not a real thing.
To like do some half-assed version of what
he does. I saw that specific tweet today was, look at Mason Plumlee's assist rate to this, blah, blah, blah. If they bring him in, they don't have to change their offense. No, let's be real. Anytime that a second unit player comes in, the offense changes. The offense's focal point changes, right? So keep that in mind. I'm looking for, and I'm more curious into exploring options for somebody who has that specific quality. Rim protecting, rebounding, right? So, and we're gonna jump in more into that, but I think that's where people's mindset needs to shift focus towards, and people have to start understanding.
That's a good take. I'm gonna keep you here for a second because I get what you're saying, and I think it's worth elaborating on. And that it's kind of what happened with Rashawn Holmes, right? When Rashawn Holmes got the full minutes, people were like, well, look what he can do, this and that. But then look what happened in a quick time when he's playing limited minutes off the bench. Because he doesn't have that specialty skill set, it's hard to stick him in the rotation. And so that's something we've talked about over the years, in that when you build a team, you have kind of core players who are elite and do their thing. But then as you start to round out your roster, they call them specialty players for a fucking reason. You know, the specialty players, Ryan, there's the athletic multiple position guard guy. There's
Malik Monk. There you go. There's your specialty guy. Yep.
There's the shooter. Okay. There's the backup point guard, floor general stereotype guy. You know, the Corey Joseph. You know, dude.
Corey Joseph. Yeah. The McConnell. Yep. Yep. There you go.
The JJ Barea's from back in the day.
JJ Barea's. Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys, they can run a pick and roll, you know, and then you have the shot blocker, the big body rebounder.
Bismack Biyombo. There you go. Yeah. There's your specific player.
Guys who can come on there and just put a 7 foot body on another guy because he matches him in weight and size. So as you start to round out your team, that's what you're looking for. Because if you try to recreate the superstar's skill set in bench form, like you said, it's not how they're going to be used. And so it's a good take. As I said,
it's not realistic. It's not realistic. You know, you can't expect a guy to come in and replicate an all-star caliber's play, right? Like that's not a thing. You know, that's like trying to find somebody for LeBron James, right? Who does so many different things on the court, and trying to find somebody as a backup player to come in and be like, you know what? We're going to run the offense through you, but we also need you to score. and we also need you to run the defense and set people up on the offense and do all these types of, that's not a thing. So what you have to do is it's more of a collective thing. You have to find players that, you know, can collectively come in and replicate what Sabonis does on the court.
Or where you can insert them, I think, in different types of lineups at different points of the game and count them to do that one thing, because that's what they do.
They give you the versatility lineups, and that's something that you always talk about.
That's why, I think in the NBA, the on-ball wing 3-and-D player, whether it's a guard or a forward, is so valuable, because that's what they are by nature, is they can go in there and play defense and they can shoot. You know, and then they can do those. You can insert those guys in spotty throughout games, and so I think for the big man position, I think a lot of people get that though. I like to give credit to a lot of the groupthink out there, Ryan, because that's why I like being a part of Kingsland. I think that Kingsland has a lot of people who have good takes out there that hone in on that, and I think that's what's happened, is people recognize the Kings need. They don't necessarily need to replicate. I think the minority is what you're saying. Somebody you need to replicate, like the Sabonis production. I think people just recognize they need a big body. They need a shot blocker. They need someone else who could rebound. But, you know, easier said than done. Like I said, to find that guy out there is difficult. So sometimes it's like, just get. I think to start back to it, it's like, I just need, they need someone at this point who could fucking play. Because if they don't address it, it's going to be problems. You cannot be counting on the Metus and the Kadas and all these guys in March to down a playoff stretch.
No, because at the end of the day, let's be real, in the playoffs, Jokic is playing 35, 36 minutes. Or what is it? No, he's playing more than that. He's playing 40 minutes a night, right? Like, you're playing a majority of the games in the playoffs, or more majority of the minutes in the playoffs. So if you have Sabonis who comes out there and has to play 32 minutes in a playoff game, that's a fucking L, right? Like, that's an issue. In the playoffs, minutes ramp up. Guys play a majority of the time. Those rotations go from possibly 10 to 7, right? Players, 8 players max for playoff teams. So you have to fix that. You have to figure something out to where, you know, you can fill that role as best as possible. Because if you get in a situation where Sabonis has 5 fouls in the third quarter, you're losing that fucking playoff game, because Jokic isn't sitting in the third quarter. He's playing.
It's a good take. It's a good take. And that's something to think about. I don't know who the player is. I think, if anything, Ryan, that's what I'm going to focus on. You focus on as kind of down the stretch, among kind of like other things with the Kings. So last thing I want to talk about, though, is just because it's trending, it's the whole All-Star situation, and that the fact that the Kings players didn't make appearances on the fan vote. I heard your take the other day when we talked about it, so I'll let you bring it in after I hit this, though. All I said is that I get it. It's bullshit. It is bullshit. And it's the way the NBA does it is dumb. But I'm not surprised, though. Like, this has always been this way. You know, Yao Ming wasn't even playing every year, and was getting voted in the All-Star games. You know, a couple years ago, Zaza Pachulia got votes over DeMarcus Cousins. It's like, it happens. It's stupid. It's just the way the system's. So I don't know. I think people out there, I get the frustration about it, but like, to be surprised, don't be surprised. It's just, you can be pissed and irritated the way it works out, but not surprised, I think.
Yeah, I think, and specifically what me and you talked about the other day was, I think what the NBA does, right? Because obviously the fan voting, the reason they're doing that is to get interaction. It's entertainment value. There's money in that, right? But what I think the NBA needs to do to fix that is, you know, limit the amount of people that you can vote for, right? Like, come up with 50 players that are All-Star eligible and then allow fans to vote on those players. Because let's be real, man, Kevon Looney was in the top 10 players in the Western Conference, and that's fucking crazy. That makes no sense to me at all. So I do like the fan voting aspect, just because it allows engagement. It's fun, man. Let's be real. How many posts have we seen over the last few weeks from Kingsland people? Hey, vote for them, vote for this. But at the same time, as much as I like the engagement, at the same time, I go look at Kingsland's people who are posting votes on there, and those same people are voting for Keegan Murray. They're voting for Malik Monk. they're voting for Kings players, and that's not right. Okay, that takes away from players like Sabonis and Fox. So for all these people that are complaining about Sacramento players not being on that top 10, you know, or on the first fan votes, whatever, at the same time, you're guilty of it as well because you're voting. I saw somebody voted for fucking Justin Jackson. Somebody posted on Kingsland that Justin Jackson, they put in there and voted for him on fan voting. You're part of the problem, people, right? So I don't want to see you complain about Fox and Sabonis not being on there when you're voting for Justin Jackson, when you're voting for past Sacramento Kings players that don't deserve it at all. So there is a fix to this. I think the NBA can, again, limit the amount of player, or limit the players that you can vote for, right? Like go find guys who meet that criteria and put them in there. And that's a way to fix it. But that has been a pet peeve of mine. I've been seeing people complain, but at the same time on Kingsland, I've been seeing motherfuckers vote for Justin Jackson, bro. That's a real thing. Go look on Kingsland. It's on there.
That's hilarious. Well, Kevon Looney, that's one. Austin Reeves, that's a whole nother thing. Fucking that's, you know, seeing guys like that. But I don't know. It's what the All-Star game. I remember years ago, 5-6 years ago, Lillard, dude, 26 points a game, didn't get into the All-Star game. I think that might have been the year they got to the Western Conference Finals. I'd have to run it back, but yeah, you know, it is what it is. It's just some bullshit. Before we wrap the episode, Ryan, I saw this the other day. The Kings season over under for wins was 32.5, I think is what I got. 31.5, maybe I might have got it at. I have to look. What are the Kings at? 21st 21. Win. So the over might actually hit. So fuck you, Vegas. I just want to bring that out because I was scrolling through Kingsland. I saw that post and just one step closer. So nothing more to add, Ryan. We'll be back on soon. Good episode. Lots to talk about. I mean, I think that the next month is going to be exciting with the trades. The Kings are trending, you know, just keeping the right direction. So, hey, guys, we appreciate you listening in. If you ever want to interact or be a part of the show, you can always do so by tagging us. You can find Ryan and I on Twitter and Facebook at KingsCastEric and KingsCastRyan, where we're active. If you want to support the show, please slide down on Apple Podcasts or slide up on Spotify to leave us a 5-star review. It does help us reach more Kings fans just like you, and we'll always read those reviews and give you a shout out on the show. And if you want to check us out more, you can find us on the Believe Podcast Network, where we are the Sacramento Kings signature show. So with that, for Ryan, this is Eric. Go Kings.
Thanks.